We're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're back, we're dads on the air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air, this 25th day of January 2011. And in Sydney today, it's a bit over 30 degrees, it's cloudy, but we're all bright and fresh and ready to go after our summer recess. This is Bill Cable from Mediate Now, and in the studio today I have the technical assistance of Tim. I'm very grateful for Tim to volunteer to do all the panelling and electronic work that's beyond me. And Tim is helping out in the absence of Ian Purdy and Phil York from Dads in Distress, who are still enjoying their summer recess, but they'll be back shortly. So, in this first show of the year, we've got a lot to get in, a big program. We're going to be speaking to Greg Andreessen from the Men's Health. We'll be speaking to Men's Health Australia. We'll also be speaking to Colin Jory in Canberra. He's had some recent experiences with the Attitude in Australia towards family violence, and be interesting to get his insights. And we'll then be speaking to Sue Price, who's well known to listeners on this program. Sue Price is a founder and director of Men's Rights Agency, and Sue will be telling us about her submission to the in relation to the exposure draft of the Family Law Amendment Family Violence Bill 2010. So while we've been away, I'd just also like to thank Peter Vandervoort, who's been putting together the best of shows since we finished up about a month ago, and he's going to be playing a big part in 2011 as well. So, before we get on to our guests, we might just have a look at some of the news stories, and there's been a lot of news that's happened while we've been away. As I mentioned, the government has put out the exposure draft of the Family Law Amendment Family Violence Bill 2010 consultation paper. The submissions were due in by the 14th of January, which is a story in itself, in that submissions were required to be prepared over the holiday period, when most people are more likely to be thinking of the beach and the end of the year and planning for next year. And politicians would never be silly enough to put an election on during that period, but they did require submissions on this exposure draft to be submitted over that period. In any event, we'll be speaking to Sue and Greg about their submissions and get their take on this proposed bill. I might say I've also spoken to John Flanagan, who is the from the Equal Shared Parenting Party, and I think his comment was they couldn't be serious about this legislation, could they, or could they? In any event, we'll go into that little bit more detail. Now, firstly, some good news from the Sun Herald on the 23rd of January. There's a story and there's a picture, and it's a great story about Ken Thompson and his son Andrew, who are finally set to return to Australia 3 years after his former partner absconded with their child overseas and sparked a desperate search. We've been following this story, and you might recall that Ken Thompson quit his job to travel by bicycle around Europe. He finished up travelling some 6,500 kilometres trying to find Andrew. Eventually, the mother, Melinda Stratton, and Andrew were discovered in Amsterdam, and after a lot of legal manoeuvring, Ken got to see his son. He's been spending regular time with him. I believe he spent Christmas with his son, and they are now on the way back, if not already back in Australia. He has asked for some privacy from the media regarding his involvement with Andrew, but we expect to hear a lot more about this in due course. It's expected that Andrew will be able to go back to school when the children go back to school after the summer holidays, and let's hope that they can get back to a normal sort of life. It was a needle in a haystack job, I think, when he headed off to cycle around Europe looking for Andrew. But a wonderful story came to an end another mother at the school where Andrew was attending noticed that there was something a bit odd and then reported it to authorities. And we've now got this this happy ending to the story. So that's great news to start the year off. I know, as far as the mother's concerned, I know that she's already sacked her first lawyer. She's now sacked the Sydney lawyer who was engaged by her brother, John, to represent her after she was caught in the Netherlands. And she has been fighting extradition. But now that Andrew is back in Australia, one would think she will give up her objection to the or her appeal on the extradition and come back to Australia, where you would like to think she'll be held responsible for having kidnapped young Andrew. In the UK, also on the good news front, there's been a report in the Daily Mail about a Mr. Justice Coleridge, who is a senior family court judge over there, and he has said in court that mothers who refuse to let separated fathers see their children should have them taken away from them, and the children should be handed over to the full-time care of the father if the mother persistently defies court orders. He called for a three strikes and you're out rule, by which children will be taken away if mothers ignored these court orders. The judge said that family courts are losing their authority because so many people take no notice of their judgments. This all sounds very familiar, doesn't it? And it's a similar story in Australia. It's a similar story in other parts around the world. I notice in the Irish Independent, there's a story here that there's an article in the Irish Independent stating that married parents are entitled to shared custody of their child as joint guardians, and the mother of a non-marital child is entitled to sole custody if the father has not been made a guardian. Unfortunately, this is incorrect for several reasons. I mean, you still have some objections to that statement, but it's incorrect because in Ireland, although married parents are entitled to shared custody unless they separate, at the separation, mothers will invariably retain custody and fathers will be obliged to financially maintain the family while being allowed only limited access or contact. The judges over there are still making this spurious claim that equality of parenting in this context should be assessed in terms of quality rather than quantity. As we've heard that before. And in Ireland, an unmarried mother is entitled to sole custody regardless of the father's position as a guardian. An unmarried father who is, even if he's granted guardianship, does not have an automatic right to custody. And even while parents are together, schools, hospitals, doctors will accept the consent of one parent, normally the mother, even though the consent may technically be required from both parents. So there's a lot of work to go in Ireland, and later in the year we will be speaking to some of the people working in this area in Ireland, so I'm looking forward to that. There's also been some changes in Australia, coming back to Australia. It was reported on the 30th of December 2010 that Australia's first government to be led by a woman has come under fire for issuing a women's health policy without announcing more funding for struggling women's services. This policy was announced by the Health Minister, Nicola Roxon, and the Minister for the Status of Women, Kate Ellis. And they stated that it would target chronic disease among women, which they say is the greatest challenge to women's health over the next two decades. It's a 140-page policy document, and it has identified five policy goals, including the need to highlight the significance of gender as a key determinant of women's health and well-being, and to acknowledge that women's health needs differ from depending on their stage of life. One interesting finding that they came out with in this report is that there's an international study finding that Australian women had the world's highest level of educational attainment. It gives the lie to the policy of the Greens at the moment, saying that one of the things they're fighting for is that women be given equal educational opportunities. I don't know how they'd respond to that finding by the government. And you also, in looking at the policy on women's health, I'd like to ask the question what the government's doing about men's health issues. Also in the Sydney Morning Herald on Friday the 21st of January 2011, there's a report on the Keneally government in New South Wales, which is stated to be sitting on a landmark clause in a workplace agreement that would see public servants who are victims of domestic violence given an extra 20 days paid leave. The clause would also ensure that bosses could not sack or suspend an employee if their attendance or work suffered because of domestic violence. This policy has already been introduced at the University of New South Wales, and it's also been introduced in Victoria, in some parts of Victoria. The Assistant Secretary of the Public Service Association, Steve Turner, said the union had written to the Premier, and that he sees it as being another condition, the objections as being another condition, rather than in a beneficial way, as protecting women who have been victims. Ensuring women had a safe and supportive workplace was vital for victims of violence. Now, once again, the focus seems to be on women, ignoring the 1 in 3 campaign that's been the Men's Health Association, and we'll be speaking to Greg Andreessen shortly about this. But in the connection with domestic violence, and also when we speak to our other guest today, the slackness in determining whether there's been domestic violence gives you real cause for concern. If this is now going to lead to people taking time off work on full pay and not being allowed to be dismissed, it's giving them people guaranteed employment by making any sort of allegation of domestic violence. Just moving on to a tragedy that was reported in early January. The Australian reports on 13th of January about a case in Melbourne where the father of two children who are likely to have been killed by their mother in a Melbourne house fire has attacked the Victorian government. In this case, Melanie Ma, 13, her brother Matthew, 11, and the oldest daughter, Samantha, 18, all died on Sunday afternoon after a violent argument between the older half-sister, Samantha, and the mother. Police believe the mother, Kylie Fowler, had attacked the oldest daughter, Samantha, 18, and Matthew with a knife, and then set the house on fire and killed them all. Dom Ma, the father of Melanie and Matthew, said he blamed the authorities for returning the children to the mother. They, meaning the authorities, knew there was a problem and they didn't fix it, said Mr. Ma, who has lived in Hobart since 2007. He said, I do hold them responsible. They haven't allowed me to protect my children. The government spokesman refused to comment on the case while police were still investigating. Mr. Ma has not seen his children since 2007, saying Ms. Fowler had stayed out of touch. He said he tried to stay in touch, but she did not want to be found, and the government workers refused to give him the family's address, citing privacy issues. He eventually tracked Ms. Fowler down to her Heidelberg Heights house only last Tuesday, and not long after that, the mother took this drastic action of stabbing her children, then burning the house down and killing them all. A dreadful story, and you can only hope that the government might learn something out of this, but I wouldn't count on it. Then finally, from the Minneapolis Star Tribune, just to end up on a happier note, there is a strong degree of confidence among legislators in Minneapolis that the legislation will pass the House and the Senate for JPC, which is joint physical custody. And this is a bill presuming that equally shared parenting after divorce will finally become a reality in the state of Minneapolis. So this is a great step forward. We need to see more of this around the world, and perhaps we'll get some momentum going so that when the news spreads from places like Minnesota, that the sky doesn't fall in when fathers are treated fairly and equally. That maybe, as I say, this might lead to further implementation in other parts of the world, including Australia. So there's a mixture of good and bad news, and quite a lot's been happening. As I say, particularly this exposure draft of the Family Law Amendment, Family Violence Bill, which we need to get onto. But we might have a short break, and we'll be back with our first guest.
Causes devastation through manipulation and intimidation. It's practiced by a parent through indoctrination. The children do not know it as they're kept in isolation. One parent disappears. dissemination through misinformation with lots of fabrication. Little brains are wired by constant stimulation against the other parent with great determination. Parental alienation, it causes devastation through manipulation and intimidation. It's practiced by a parent through indoctrination. The children do not know it as they're kept in isolation. No more expectation of parents' visitation. Nothing is now positive, only denigration. All attempted contact create a complication. Memories are erased with determined application. Parental alienation, it causes devastation through manipulation and intimidation. It's practiced by a parent through indoctrination. The children do not know it as they're kept in isolation. We don't see our children despite our protestation. The court will not act to help our situation. Dare to speak out, you invite recrimination, which destroys your reputation by nasty imputation. Parental alienation, it causes devastation through manipulation and intimidation. It's practiced by a parent through indoctrination. The children do not know it as they're kept in isolation. This must be exposed, cause a revelation. And this is child abuse, a cruel abomination. The courts must stand up to save their reputation. Eliminate this practice of parental alienation. Parental alienation, it causes devastation through manipulation and intimidation. It's practiced by a parent through indoctrination. The children do not know it as they're kept in isolation. Parental alienation, it causes devastation through manipulation and intimidation. It's practiced by a parent through indoctrination.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
25th day of January 2011, and this is Bill Cable from Mediate Now. Our next guest is Greg Andreessen, who's well known to listeners of this program. Greg is a researcher and media liaison with Men's Health Australia, Australia's primary source of information about the psychological and social well-being of men's and boys, and he's also a senior researcher with the One in Three campaign, which aims to raise public awareness of the existence and needs of male victims of family violence and abuse. Greg, good morning.
Good morning, Bill. How are you going?
Well, thank you. And it's great to have you on the first show of the year.
And, yeah, look, it's an honour and a privilege. Did you have a good New Year's?
Yes, thank you. It was a nice break. And it's come back all refreshed and ready to go and to keep up the good fight.
So, that's it. Well, we've got a fight in our hands this year, that's for sure. That's the Attorney General's proposed new family law, Family Violence Bill, which appears to be a, you know, they give a the facade or the appearance of it being a process where they're interested in public input, but really they're just, they've got their agenda set and they're going to steamroll it through no matter what people say, unfortunately. So we've really got a fight in our hands to try and you know, stop this from going through.
Yeah, so, I mean, the first step was to release it and then call for submissions by the 14th of January, which, you know, it must be a first to have it over that period. But have you had any feedback on how things are going?
No, not as yet. I mean, unfortunately, the Attorney General's Department is a fairly opaque bureaucracy, so we've sent in our submissions, as have many other men's and fathers and family groups around the country, and we don't really know whether they're going to be read, or if they're going to be read, whether they'll be taken seriously, or we suspect that they may be, you know, listed as submissions, but not really any interest taken, because the Attorney General's, you know, the whole way this process has been designed from the start has had an agenda. For example, ever since McClelland and the Labor government came to power, they've been listening to the voices of a small group of very radical feminists who claim that the family court is regularly handing kids over to abusive and violent fathers, and as such they commissioned, I've lost count, but maybe up to a dozen different papers, inquiries, studies, all with the aim of finding out that this theory that the family court was handing children over to abusive and violent fathers. They haven't commissioned a single study which looks at the other side of the picture, which is the prevalence of false allegations of violence and abuse by mothers, but also by fathers, and the also the prevalence of parental alienation.
Yes, I mean, it's almost protecting that, making it a protected species. But you've been associated with two submissions, I think, the Men's Health Australia and also the One in Three campaign.
That's correct.
And I just wonder if you could single out for us the main points in the exposure draft that you objected to and what you've got to say about it.
Sure. Well, why don't I start with the submission from Men's Health Australia, and then maybe we could, after the break, we could come back and talk about the One in Three side of things.
Sure.
So Men's Health Australia, it's the primary source of information about the psychological and social well-being of men and boys. So when people think of men's health, they think of Men's Health magazine and fitness and, you know, maybe testicles and prostate and, you know, sort of a limited idea of men's physical health, maybe a bit of mental health. But what we're about with the psychological and social well-being of men and boys is looking at the things out there in society which affect the health and well-being of males. So that could be things like the poor performance of boys in the education system, which then leads them to drop out early, you know, not go to uni, therefore earn less, therefore, you know, not be able to look after their health because they may be stuck in jobs on construction sites or, you know, unhealthier work. So the family court is just one of these social factors that really has a severe effect on the health and well-being of men. So,
yeah, well, the statistics are very clear, aren't they, on what happens in these broken families when the father is taken out of the picture?
Absolutely. Well, the impact on children when fathers aren't around, and, you know, look, we have to be honest, some fathers don't do the right thing and do leave their families, but as far as what we've seen in the research, it's just as likely that fathers are booted out of their family. They want to have a relationship with their kids, but aren't allowed to, either by parental alienation, false allegations, or just a recalcitrant mother who is determined to excise every last bit of that father from that family. So the impact on the kids when fathers aren't there, whether they leave or they're booted out, is absolutely, you know, there's there's rock solid evidence that their educational performance suffers, their social adjustment, they really suffer in a wide range of areas. When fathers aren't in their lives, they're much more likely to turn to crime, violence, end up in prison, you name it. Pretty much any social ill that you can name is highly correlated with fatherlessness. So
it becomes a vicious circle, doesn't it? And then that makes people feel justified in cracking down even harder and getting rid of more fathers, and then you can just see it continuing for generation after generation.
So what we're arguing is that these proposed laws, because there's two main points that, from Men's Health Australia's point of view, that we really disagree with, besides the fact that the process of this inquiry is an absolute farce and has a predetermined agenda. The two things that we're really concerned with is the issue of removal of penalties against parents who make provenly false allegations, and this is just—it's basically going to give an open license to parents, and mostly mums, who want to fabricate allegations of violence and abuse as a legal strategy in family law proceedings. So, without that penalty, without that disincentive, it's basically saying, you know, go ahead, make up whatever stories you like, and you won't be penalised.
And the rewards are great, aren't they?
Well, the rewards are fantastic, really. I mean, in terms of the family wealth, the family house, access to the children, and it may not be that initially parents, and usually mothers, are wanting to go down that path, but there are a lot of unscrupulous lawyers out there who will advise their clients, if you make up some stories about your ex-partner, you've got a much better chance of getting the house, getting the kids. And so this is really, really dangerous stuff. So once we have this open season on false allegations, I mean, I don't know if you've ever been subjected to false allegations. I certainly haven't, but I've spoken to many, many dads who have, and it absolutely destroys you.
Yes.
I mean, it crushes you. The fact that you have been in the family court, have been alleged to, you know, sexually interfere with your own child. And that then gets out, and there's the suspicions from your family members and your friends, and people who believe these lies. It absolutely destroys you, and so many men who this has happened to, they self-medicate with drugs and alcohol, they get depressed, they some of them even commit suicide because this is just such a destructive process.
You can't prove a negative, and I think a lot of this you mentioned about the lawyers. I think that flows from the adversarial system, and the lawyers think, oh well, I've got to do the best for my client, so
I've got to win at any cost.
Exactly,
it's a strategy that'll help us win.
But I know several men I've dealt with recently who, in both cases, have had 7 years of absolute hell and agony, only at the end of that period for the court to acknowledge that there never was any sexual abuse, and the whole thing's been fabricated, and then there's no penalty even under the current legislation. So by encouraging it under this new legislation, you really wonder what's going to happen.
That's it. And by then, I mean, can you imagine 7 years later, fantastic, the family court's given a rubber stamp and been vindicated you. The party at fault, which is the person who made these false allegations, gets no penalties, gets away scot-free. And meanwhile, how do you rebuild your life? How do you get those 7 years back?
Mm.
There's no compensation, there's no financial or otherwise. It's absolutely, it's a farce. But you're absolutely right, the adversarial nature of the family court system is part of the problem, but that's a bigger issue that maybe needs to be looked at in another day. But that one of our recommendations was that the federal government abandon all the proposed changes and actually commission an open and transparent public inquiry into, first of all, the 2006 amendments, but also into any other further changes that are needed to improve the family law system in general for Australian families. We're calling upon the government to actually have an open inquiry into the entire family law system. And that, and then we can actually look at things about the crazy adversarial nature of the system. And we can look at a whole range of things that aren't working. The way that associated professionals, you know, the court psychologists and, you know, social workers, etc., how they often collude with a dysfunctional and alienating parent to, you know, to remove the, one of the parents. And, you know, the, all of these issues that we talk about, that you guys talk about regularly on Dad's on the Air, we want the, you know, there to be an open public inquiry into this whole system, this crazy dysfunctional family law industry. Because when you come, when it comes down to it, there, it's a multi-billion-dollar industry. All the lawyers, the judges, the associated professionals, psychologists, social workers, etc., you know, they're all making a living off the destruction of families. You know, it's absolutely appalling.
I have to agree. We're speaking with Greg Andreessen from Men's Health Australia. Greg, was there another major point you wanted to bring across?
Yeah, so the second point was, besides the issue of false allegations, was that they're also removing the friendly parent provision from the Act. And so the friendly parent provision basically said that both parents must facilitate a good relationship between the child and the other parent, and facilitate good access for the between the other parent and the child. So basically, it's saying when you separate, you can't, for the sake of the child's well-being, you can't remove the other parent from the other child's life. You have to facilitate that. You have to be a friendly parent. And they're removing this clause, which means that those parents who engage in false allegations, in parental alienation, those parents who tell their kids, you know, Daddy's a bad man, Daddy's going to come round, he's going to kill you, he's going to abuse you, you know, he's angry, he's violent, you know, all of these terrible lies that brainwash the kids into not seeing their father. If that, but under the current laws, if that comes up in court, that parent is seen as an unfriendly parent, and so gets penalised. And sometimes the children can, we would hope, actually be given to the other parent. If by removing those provisions, it's basically saying, go ahead, alienate the kids all you want. You don't have to be friendly anymore. You can be as nasty as you want in lying about your ex-partner, and the court gives you the stamp of approval.
Yes, and sometimes it's more subtle than that. It's, I think, described as the teapot phenomenon, where one parent will stand there with their hands on the hips with body language demonstrating not wanting that child to go with the other parent. And that may be all that's required sometimes, but it has the same effect.
Well, yeah, I mean, kids are incredibly smart at picking up those signals, and if you know, even if they just sense that, you know, mum's uncomfortable about me going with dad, well, you know, that's going to lead to the child being anxious, you know, afraid, you know, uncertain about whether to go off with their dad. So, absolutely, it's a full spectrum, but. So they're the two main issues that we at Men's Health Australia had a problem with.
Look, we're speaking with Greg Andreessen. Greg, we might just have a quick break, and then we'll come back and perhaps get your views on from the 1 in 3 hat that you wear.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Greg.
Pleasure.
Want, you can marry, look at me, I am old but unhappy. I was once like you are now, and I know that it's not easy to be calm when you found something going on. But take your time, think a lot. Why, think of everything you've got, for you will still be here tomorrow, but your dreams may not. How can I try to explain? When I do, he turns away again. It's always been the same, same old story. From the moment I could talk, I was ordered to listen. Now there's a way, and I know that I have to go away. I know I have to go. Not time to make a change. Just sit down, take it slowly. You're still young, that's your fault. There's so much you have to go through. Find a girl, settle down.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air, this 25th day of January, and we're speaking with Greg Andreessen from the 1 in 3 campaign. Now, Greg, you mentioned that 1 in 3 campaign have also put a submission in to the government on this Family Law Amendment Family Violence Bill. I wonder if you could tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, look, absolutely. The 1 in 3 campaign, as your listeners probably is aware, we aim to raise public awareness of the existence and needs of male victims of family violence and abuse. And the problems we had with the proposed Family Violence Amendments similar to Men's Health Australia, in the sense that we feel that the false allegations and parental alienation will, you know, basically flourish under these changes. But we also concentrated more on the definition of family violence that's been proposed in these new changes. Basically, the changes propose that the definition of family violence in the Family Law Act be changed and be expanded. Now, we're in favour of the expansion of the definition of family violence in some respects, because family violence is not only physical and sexual abuse. It can encompass economic abuse, emotional, psychological abuse, administrative abuse, where a partner uses institutions to inflict damage on their partner or their ex-partner. So there's a wide range of abusive behaviours that aren't captured under the current definition. So we're in favour of expanding it, because the problem with the proposed definition is not just that it's expanded and lists all of these range of abuse, but that the proposed definition doesn't have any there's no need for the abusive behaviour to be part of an ongoing pattern of domination. So, for example, under the proposed changes, if I get into a fight with my partner and it's a one-off and my partner slaps me in the face, and there's no history of violence or domination, none of us are abusing each other, we're not trying to control each other in the relationship, we just had a tiff, my partner slaps me, that is just as bad as if I was in a relationship with my partner and I'm terrorizing her, threatening her to kill her, I'm, you know, beating her up every other weekend, you know, the worst form of domination, which is, that's real family violence. Mm. They're equal under these proposals. So
yes,
what we're saying is, yes, let's include all these different forms of abuse, but let's say that there has to be an ongoing pattern of domination and control by one party over the other for those abusive behaviours to be looked at. If it's just a one-off occasion when, you know, someone slapped someone in the heat of the moment, someone yelled at someone, you know, those sort of things should not be used as a lever to remove the children from one of the parents. Because let's face it, under this broad definition of family violence, every single relationship in Australia is guilty.
And particularly, it's an emotional time, isn't it? When the relationship is breaking down, that's shouldn't be taken as a standard sort of relationship guide.
It's the most emotional and heated time in any person's life.
Mm.
A breakup and the ending of a relationship, especially when there are kids involved, is the most fraught time of any experience that anyone can ever go through.
Mm.
So of course there are raised voices, there's yelling, there's sometimes hitting, but you know, this is normal human behaviour under extreme emotional stress, and it should not be used as a leverage for either parent to shut the other the children out of the other parent's life, unless there has been a proven ongoing pattern of abuse and that this is actually par for the course, that this current violence and abuse that's going on at the time of breakup has been going on through the whole relationship and one party has been dominating and abusing the other. So, and look, another problem with the proposals is that it's not just looking at violence and abuse at the time of the family of going through separation. It looks at the entire relationship. So one party can say, well, 10 years ago, Your Honour, my partner hit me.
Mm.
And that's just as bad as if my partner's currently threatening to kill me at the time of the breakup. So you can bring up any abuse that's happened at any time in ancient history, even if it never happened again, and that is equal to abuse that's ongoing at the moment of going through the family law system.
Yeah,
so
it's like having the ammunition there that you can pull the trigger at any time in the next 20 or 30
that's
years.
That's right. Make a note of that one, and you can use that later on.
Yeah.
It's,
one also would think that the politicians should perhaps look at the way they behave in Parliament as far as verbal abuse.
Absolutely. The other thing is, because I know we're running out of time, the other main point in the 1 in 3 campaign submission is the removing of the reasonableness clause. So basically, currently the definition of family violence under the Family Law Act requires that any fear or apprehension about a person's personal well-being or safety be reasonable. So it's basically saying, would any person in that same situation of, you know, being yelled at, threatened, etc., etc., is it reasonable for you to feel apprehension or fear at that time? And that's a very important clause, because otherwise anyone can just go in and to the family court and say, I feel afraid. I'm afraid of my partner.
Mm. You can't test it if it's subjective. So
it's utterly subjective.
Mm.
There's no testing. There's no proof. There's no looking at that and saying, well, is it reasonable for you to feel afraid? Let's see.
Yeah.
Your partner's never done anything violent, never raised his voice. Maybe it's not reasonable for you to feel afraid in this situation. Maybe you're afraid of losing your kids, but as your partner probably is, but it's not reasonable for you to be afraid of your partner. And so that's really, really important. Otherwise, the family law, the family court is basing decisions on parenting matters on someone's on the whim of, you know, someone's subjective feelings or what they say about their feelings without any testing about whether that's reasonable or not. So,
yeah, Greg, look, unfortunately we're running out of time, and I'm very grateful for your views. I wonder if people would like to follow up on what you've been saying. They can go to your website, aren't they? Would perhaps you could give us that address?
Absolutely. Look, Men's Health Australia is Men's Health Australia, all one word, .net, and the 1 in 3 campaign is 1 in 3, either letters or numbers, doesn't matter, .com.au.
Well, that's great. And Greg, thank you very much for being our first guest for the year, and we wish you all the best with the with those various campaigns.
Thank you, and you too, guys. You're doing a great job, and keep up the great work in 2011.
Thanks, Greg. See you soon.
Bye.
They grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child. Dad's in Distress, 1300 853 437.
Is there anybody going to listen to my story? All about the girl who came to stay. She's the kind of girl you want so much it makes you sorry. Still you don't regret a single day. Ah, girl. So hard to leave her, she will turn to me and start to cry. And she promises the earth to me, and I believe her. After all this time, I don't know why. Ah, girl, 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 she's the kind of girl who puts you down when friends are there, you feel a fool. When you say she's looking good, she acts as if it's understood she's cool. Ooh, 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 girl, girl, girl. Was she told when she was young that pleasure? Did she understand it when they said that a man must break his back to earn his day of leisure? Will she still believe it when he's dead? Oh, girl, girl, girl.
grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child. Dad's in Distress, 1-300-853-437.
With Dad's on the Air.
And back to Dad's on the Air, this 25th January 2011. And our next guest is Dr. Colin Jory. Colin is a secondary school teacher, historian, Shakespeare scholar, and he did honours and master's degrees in history at ANU and has a doctorate in Shakespearean literature, also at ANU. Colin and his wife are happily married with 8 children, 7 grandchildren. And Colin, you're on the phone now, I believe.
That's right, yes, Bill.
Colin, now, we've been talking about the exposure draft for the Family Law Amendment Family Violence Bill 2010, and I think you've got some strong views about the way the legislation and the authorities are proceeding in this area.
That's right, yes. It's an area with which I've unfortunately had to be familiar because of, way back, an incident at one of my daughter's schools, key problem from a normal person's point of view, as distinct from advantage from the feminist point of view, is that the definition of family violence is to be made even more flexible than it is, or to be more specific. The family court in practice applies the term family violence to a limitless range of behaviour that someone, usually the woman, claims to have found offensive or intimidating. And what's proposed now is that this actually be put in federal law. Again, an example I'll give is that if a husband and a wife are having an argument, if she screams at him, that will not be defined as family violence, because it will be held that he, being a big tough fellow, has no reason to be in fear, whereas if he screams back, that will be deemed to be family violence, because it will be held that he has put her in fear if she claims that.
This is extraordinary, isn't it?
This is a funny thing, Bill. It's extraordinary by the standards of ordinary people and by what ordinary people imagine is happening. It's not extraordinary in terms of what is really happening with the domestic violence industry, the domestic violence laws, the family court. It is ordinary. This is the sort of thing, the sort of criteria and standards that they are applying all the time, everywhere. The only difference here is that it actually institutes it in federal law instead of just leaving it for the court bureaucracy to determine according to the fashions of the domestic violence industry.
And it seems to be being done in secret. I think in that case, or the instance you mentioned before involving your daughter, you wouldn't have been aware of it in the normal course, but you did become aware of it, that this sort of this approach is being promoted without any the wider community knowing about it.
Oh yes, yeah, that's part of the deal. In the family court, for instance, what you've really got, you've really got two judiciaries and two types of law. You've got a sub-judiciary, overwhelmingly feminist and trained by on the feminist domestic violence racket criteria and so on. And by the way, I'm talking here of actual training books that you can find on the internet for family court judges. As well as the programs on the internet of courses they've attended. You've got this sub-judiciary, and then you've got the formal judges. And what will happen is that if a woman claims that the husband shouldn't have access to the children because he's is guilty of domestic violence or family violence, what will happen is that the matter will then be passed by the judge across to the sub-judiciary, who will the counsellors, psychologists, exposed. Essentially, it's a trial. It's trial and judgment, where he has no right to have legal representation. There is no clear definitions and boundaries of what constitutes offence. If he's deemed to have been guilty of family violence by creating what is deemed to be a threatening atmosphere or whatever, and he denies it, then the actual guidance book for the family court recommends that this be regarded as a sign of denial, is the term, used against him. You know, that if he won't admit that when he shouted back that this was family violence, and that shows that he's addicted to it and should be used adversely. And this is what is happening.
So there's really no way out, is there? I mean, and you're starting from a position where you don't have the normal presumption of innocence that English law and Australian law is supposed to be based on.
Yeah, you have a completely different set of law. This is where you've got what it is. You've got here the intersection of the Family Law Act and the domestic violence industry's laws. It's a perfect match. And the domestic violence law, or family violence law, it's really equivalent to another stratum of law. Like you've got criminal law, you've got civil law, with their own criteria of proof and their own standards of proof and so on. But what you've got now here with this domestic violence law, it's really equivalent to martial law. Where ordinary law is suspended. In states, in situations of grave civil emergency, if there's a massive fire or a war, then you can stop people from going to their homes and so on. The authorities are entitled to do things that they couldn't ordinarily do without going through the courts. Well, what you've got is a situation like a permanent state of martial law against men, where things like that, the presumption of innocence, the right to have certainty in law, so that you know whether you're offending against a law or whether you aren't, those are suspended. The standard of the reasonable man, the reasonable person, is suspended, so that it doesn't matter if someone alleges that you made them feel intimidated, and you say, well, a reasonable person wouldn't have felt intimidated by that. That doesn't matter. It's just so that what constitutes offence is purely the alleged subjective response of the other party, what they allege that they felt. It gets worse when you trace the further extensions of the domestic violence industry. There's no right of habeas corpus. You can be, you have no right to a hearing without being judged. You have no right to your property. That is the enjoyment of your property. You can be excluded from access to it on a protracted basis, and so on. But what this is why I say what you've got is a new stratum of law equivalent to a permanent state of martial law.
Yes, it sort of brings to mind the Star Chamber, even, really, because you can't be represented when you deal with this next level, with the court experts and the psychologists and family counsellors.
Yep.
And I can say from my own experience, when I queried a report there, where the reporter said that I hadn't offered my child her own bedroom, and when I went back to her and said, but look, she has got her own bedroom, I've shown you photos of it. She said, yes, but that was my perception. So, I don't know how you get around that.
Yeah, that is right. That's a suspension of the criterion of the reasonable man, the reasonable person. And as a matter of fact, you'll find in the draft for the, or is it the, what's the...
The exposure draft?
Yeah, the exposure draft. For the proposed amendments, it actually boasts the criterion of the person's response, the individual person's response, rather than the reasonable man. It is simply that it doesn't matter whether when. The other person alleges that the respondent alleges that they felt intimidated. It doesn't matter whether it was reasonable for them to feel intimidated. It'll be deemed that you acted in an intimidatory fashion simply because they say they felt intimidated. So what constitutes intimidatory is not a, you know, an objective thing that can be identified by the ordinary responses of the ordinary citizen. It's suddenly a subjective thing, in this case, determined by what the other person alleges they felt.
Yeah,
and very much it is star chamber situation. More than that, you when you get subjected to the subjudiciary, the inquisition by the subjudiciary with no right of representation, you're not even in law allowed to report what happened. So it's not only secret, and you're with you're not even being allowed to have a counsel present, let alone the public. It's secret to the extent that in law you're not allowed to report what went on and what you were subjected to. In practice, I would say that it'd be a very good idea to totally ignore that restriction and let it be appealed to the High Court. But that's the criterion, that if you actually tell the horrors that you were subjected to, then that's technically breaching the law.
Yes, and the horrors there, as you mentioned, those courses. I did the FDRP course, the Family Dispute Resolution Provider course, and I was shocked at the material coming out of the Attorney General's, because it was so so prejudiced and biased, and in some cases wrong.
Yep.
They don't seem to have any concern about these things when they're pushing this agenda.
No. It's the preserve of a particularly noxious feminist subculture, and it's even when you're dealing with attorney generals and so on departments, we expect objectivity. As soon as you you get the all the business of domestic violence, offensiveness, that kind of thing, abuse coming up, then immediately they're expected to farm out responsibility for doing the materials, giving the courses, defining the terms to the industry, to the domestic violence industry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so bad in the ACT, you even have a domestic violence prevention office attached to local, I think it's the Attorney General's department here, to give permanent input according to the dogmas of the this hideous subculture. It's bad anyway, but what you're getting here with the proposed amendments to the Family Law Act is a tightening of the existing links between the family court, which is a culture, including and even to a considerable extent dominated by its bureaucracy, the wider domestic violence culture.
Mm. We're speaking with Dr. Colin Drury. Colin, you've, I know, written to News Weekly about some of the things you've been saying today. And what can we do? I mean, how can we get the news out so that people know what's going on?
That's the big problem, Bill. But potentially, the internet is an unprecedented boon for people seeking to spread information widely. But of course, the matter is, how do you get people to know what's on the internet and to look at it? There's just so much. But certainly that's the first thing. In a way, it's perhaps be things where there are very good, I think, very good sites. And I know, of course, we do have some very good sites that tell the whole story. But then, with advertising through television, brochure, letterbox, whatever, to tell people that they're there and to look at them, because that's the issue. But the further problem, of course, is if I might just extend that the whole matter of spreading information. You've got children in schools being indoctrinated with the hideous dogmas of this diseased domestic violence subculture, and conditioned to, for instance, to regard any, with girls being conditioned to regard any vexation in marriage as the result of and proof of domestic violence, the husband, boyfriend, whatever, as the perpetrator. Now, this is happening, and I have actually been in on, by more or less coincidence, one of these courses in a school here in Canberra, the indoctrination of the children to regard any vexation as a sort of psychological, emotional, the term used there was domestic violence, now family violence is a term. So what you're getting is you're actually getting the kids essentially being conditioned to be unmarriageable or incapable of sustaining marriage by being taught to look for symptoms of domestic or family violence, and the symptoms being, let's say, he shouted back. And that kind of thing, but they're not being given any material that actually enables them to identify what's going on, who's behind all this this racket, to identify the lies that are being told to them as lies and so on. So this is a particularly important thing when it comes to information. How do we get information into the schools to counter the hate propaganda that's being got into the schools without parents knowing, that's intended to cruel the children's chances of sustaining a happy marriage?
Well, it is a problem because it's hard enough to get the politicians on side, but then you've got to get the next level of the bureaucracy that's promoting all this stuff, I imagine. You'd be very well aware of that in Canberra.
Oh, yes, yeah, that's the bureaucracy is here. Well, the worst thing is you've got the so much of the industry, the domestic violence industry, spliced into the bureaucracy. As I say, here you've got the Domestic Violence Crisis Service, the Rape Crisis Centre, all sort of government funded to go into schools and spread the hate propaganda. You've got the Domestic Violence Prevention Council. These are the upfront obvious kind of things, but then you've got all sorts of little courses, like the one that I attended. You get a course on bullying for the school. Someone's going around, they tell the principal that they're being funded by the government to give a little play on bullying. Sounds great until you go along and you find that what it is, you get a silly, exaggerated situation presented, but then the message comes through that this kid's a bully because his father's a bully. His father's bullied his wife, and the wife has left him. Why didn't she leave him or take action against him? Or because she probably felt that she was guilty. Then suddenly you get the message: domestic violence is the greatest cause of illness to women all over the place. It's emotional, it's psychological. Dob your parents in, and you know, on if you think there is domestic violence, again, as I say, always that. Emotional, psychological, as well as physical. So, you know, this is the sort of thing that sometimes you can't even, you have no idea what's happening. You don't know that what looks like a perfectly innocent course, or even a standard course in the school, that there's actually within it this propaganda. It's a most insidious situation.
Yes. Colin, unfortunately we're running out of time, but look, it's been great talking to you and great to hear your perspective and your passion for this. We can just hope that it leads somewhere and some of this ridiculous legislation gets put in the dustbin.
Yeah.
But look, thank you again for coming on the program, and perhaps we can stay in touch and check on developments.
Yes, look, that'd be great, Bill.
Well, so once again, Dr. Colin Drury, thank you for coming on the show and for your contribution to the first show of the year for Dads on the Air.
Okay.
Thank you.
Away. You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. I know a man. He came from my hometown. He wore his passion for his woman like a thorny crown. He said, Dolores, I live in fear. My love for you is so overpowering, I'm afraid that I will disappear. Slip sliding away, slip sliding away. You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. And I know a woman became a wife. These are the very words she uses to describe her life. She said a good day ain't got no rain. She said a bad day's when I lie in bed and think of things that might have been. Slip sliding away, slip sliding away. The nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. And I know a father who had a son. He longed to tell him all the reasons for the things he'd done. He came a long way just to explain. Kissed his boy as he lay sleeping, then he turned around and headed home again. His slip sliding away. You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. God only knows, God makes his plan. The information's unavailable to the mortal man.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air, this 25th day of January 2011. And our next guest is Sue Price. Sue is well known to listeners on this program. She's a founder and director of the Men's Rights Agency, which is a national body devoted to levelling the playing field so that all Australians can be treated equally with respect, consideration and compassion while acknowledging their own responsibilities. Sue, I was hoping to talk to you about this exposure draft and your submission to the government.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Well, thank you.
Yes, it's a bit of an interesting situation, isn't it, where the government, after only 4 years, I think it is, are deciding to roll back the shared parenting when, by their own statute and their own implementation, they had arranged with the Australian Institute of Family Studies to conduct research into the changes, which were fairly large in you know, trying to change a population's attitude towards fathering and parenting. They originally had a program set down that they would supply their response, the results of their research by 2013.
Yes.
Here we are, it's 2011. We've had an interim report in 2009 from the Australian Institute, virtually supporting most of the shared parenting changes and saying people that welcome them. But the government, 2 years later, is deciding to roll it all back just because they've listened to a number of very raucous and extreme women's groups that I believe do not have any interest in promoting shared parenting whatsoever.
Yes, and these, a lot of these women's groups are in fact funded by the government, but it seems to be a bit of window dressing. I mean, just the fact that the submissions had to be submitted by 14th of January.
Oh, it was an outrageous timetable, Bill, absolutely. It was 14th of January, right over the holiday period. We're in the middle of floods, and I have to tell
yes.
you a very, very funny story of what happened. We had, we've got a schedule to get a new roof, and we've got, you know, veranda in holes and all the rest of it, and I rang the Attorney General's office to seek an extension of time, only of 2 days,
yes.
Because we were struggling with power cuts. And actually, when I rang, we had no lights, no power, no nothing. And they said, oh, yes, all right, but be quick, get it in, you know, as soon as possible. Well, a day later, rather unbelievably, I had a call from a place called Caxton Legal Service, whom I haven't spoken to probably for 14 or 15 years, wanting to know if we were still able to operate, if we were open there, had the flood affected us or not. Now, why would I get a call from someone I haven't spoken to for many, many years making those inquiries?
Very curious, isn't it? That was going to be my next question, if there's any move to extend that time from the 14th of January that I haven't heard.
Well, apparently not. They've taken a very strict line on it, so I'm hopeful that mine has gone in. I did ring the young woman that I spoke to, and she said, yes, she had put it in herself, so I can only go on that report.
Yes, and you've taken an interesting approach. You've put in a statement of claim as a part of your submission.
Yeah, look, I think for the number of years that we've been involved in it, which is sort of 16, 17 years, something like that, we have always, and I have noticed other groups, fathers' groups, men's groups, have always taken a reactive position. They never, ever put forward what we would like to see change to progress the changes forward. So my the statement of claim that we've put forward is the immediate changes that need to be made to encourage a better treatment of both parents, to enable children to have contact with both parents, and to be able to get the system, as it's called, you know, from the family court through to counsellors, everyone who's involved in it, working a little better, and in the interests of the family, not just in the best interests of the children, because the best interests of the children are served by looking after the best interests of the family as well.
Mm. Well, that just seems to me to be a bit of a code sometimes, saying best interests of the children is...
It's a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yes, it's what we say is going to be in the best interests of the children.
Yeah, and I have to... I worry about the number of family reports that are done by people who I think are bringing their own ideology into the sphere and are mostly giving fathers bad reports, in some cases, and very unfairly. You know, they expect to put a father together with a child after the child hasn't seen dad for a number of months, and expect them to be able to interact well together. And this, mind you, is after a lot of negative commentary from the mother with the child in her care. So the child is suddenly approaching this father that she now believes is the monster from hell.
Yes.
And how can you portray a good attitude and a good relationship between two people when they've had so little chance to be together?
Yeah, it's such an artificial situation, and the poor dad might have half an hour or 45 minutes on which his whole life's going to be determined, and that of the child.
Yeah, it's absolutely dreadful. These people don't get out of their air-conditioned offices. They don't go and see the circumstances of where the child's living, which is, in my opinion, essential.
Mm.
And one of the points I make in our statement of claim is that the family law decisions that are made need to be followed up. Now, Richard Chisholm, Professor Richard Chisholm, ex-family court judge, he made that suggestion, and I go along with it. Not often I agree with him, but I do agree with him on that we do need to follow up. Like, they make these decisions, and then nobody goes near these people to see what's happened, you know, what the effect is.
Oh, I've heard a judge in court say, I'll make a decision today, you'll never cross my mind again for the rest of my life. But, you know, he leaves the dads the parents have to live with it then.
That's right, and that's dreadful what they're doing. So we've put in a list of things. I've actually asked on our list of people, of fathers, if they can come up with any other things that we think should be added to it that will make it a work in progress. But I think we really need to push this forward and try to get the government to say, to listen to us, not from the point of view of saying, what do you think of the proposals we're putting forward? Well, to heck with those. Let's look at the ones that we want to put forward that we think are going to make it much better for children to have both their parents in their life.
Yes, and I know you've referred to the UN conventions, which is that's another area which perhaps we should be focusing on.
Well, yes, it's one of the suggestions I agree with in part, but only if they bring in the other UN conventions. Family law is what it says. It is not children's law. It is not a children's act. It's a family law act. When you're dealing with families, you're dealing with parents, children, other siblings, other aunts, uncles, grandparents, all the rest of the family. So if they're going to subscribe or bring in the the children's rights part of the UN conventions, they have to bring in the parents' and adults' rights as well. They can't just do one without the other.
Yes, and Sue, I might mention that I'm sure your proposal is up there, but you've got a new website, which I must congratulate you on. I think it's come together wonderfully well.
It's still a work in progress.
Oh, as everything is.
We're still ironing out the hiccups with it, and it needs a lot of information putting onto it. But it's looking good, I think, and it sort of gives us a bit of a new vim and vigour to proceed.
Absolutely. No, I think it comes across extremely well. You might just give the address there. It's www.mensrights.com.au.
That's right, Bill. Yes.
And I see the child support calculator. I haven't had a go at it myself, but is that in operation?
Not finalised yet. It's our old one that we're doing a revamp. It needed upgrading with the new annual rates of the cost of children, and that's going on at the moment. So it'll give you a rough guide, but it's not accurate. People can access it for a rough guide, but then they need to take into consideration that the cost of the child when that was first prepared have increased now.
Yes. Oh, that's it.
So we hope to have that up and ready by the end of the month, but the end of the month is fast, rapidly approaching. <I'm afraid. laughs>
Well, that'll be another great resource on the website.
Look, I really think, I don't know what you've talked about the rest of it this morning, but I think there are three major things in these bill changes, the proposals. One is the expansion of the domestic violence legislation and what is regarded as domestic violence. And without any proof, whereas before, currently it has to be a reasonable belief of harm. You can't just sort of wander in and say, oh, I'm afraid, and that's it. It's good enough reason for a DV order or for the court to take it into account. But under the new changes, it will be very much broadened and much easier to have it taken into account. The other part of it is the family-friendly provision, which they're trying to take out. This is where a parent had to be seen to be encouraging the other parents, the child's contact with the other parent. And of course that was put in there specifically to try and prevent the alienation that goes on with some families. And the last one, of course, is removing the penalty, and it was only a cost order penalty for making a false allegation. Our point of view on that, of course, is we need that very much strengthened. Penalties like that should remain, but so should perjury, should be introduced properly into the Family Law Act if they're going to do it, and there should be jail penalties and heavy fines for people who make those allegations. But unfortunately, the family court has always regarded perjury or false allegations as being, oh, it's all in the heat of the moment. People say these things, they don't really mean them. Well, I can tell you they have a devastating effect on anybody who's accused of abuse or child abuse.
Well, there seems to be a lot of confusion about perjury. I went to a conference where there was a judge from the family court and also the Attorney General, and the Attorney General made the statement that it was nothing to do with him, it was for the family court to determine if it was perjury. The judge of the family court said it's nothing to do with us, it's the Attorney General that must make a decision as to whether there's been a perjury. So
well, this is what I picked up and used in our response as well, that Nicholson had said something to that effect, that he had put forward complaints to the Attorney General's department, but that nothing happened. They're telling everybody, or they told the Senate committee, I think it was, that they can't make a complaint to the DPP directly, but they can make it to the Attorney General, and they have to pass it on to the Department of Public Prosecutions, that is, for them to action. Well, it just doesn't happen. It goes round in the ever-decreasing circle.
Well, the Attorney General didn't even seem to know that. You know, it's his department,
I won't say anything. I'll be politically correct and keep my opinions of the Attorney General to myself.
Yes, well, pretty disappointing. So, to see your full submission and the statement of claim, I guess you just need to go to your website,
Sue? It's not on the website yet. It will be very shortly.
Great. So we can look out for that.
Yeah, if anyone wants a copy, I'm happy. If they want to send me an email, I'll forward one on to them.
Great. So they can get your email through your website
again?
Yes,
sure. Yep.
So just repeating that again, it's www.mensrights.com.au.
That's correct, Bill.
And that'll get you in touch with Sue. Sue, I think I can almost hear the music starting. We're running out of time.
I know. Always the last word.
Yes, it's you got the last word, but unfortunately it's all a bit squeezed.
I wish I could have the last word with people like the government.
Yes.
Sort of get things in there, but anyway, we're trying.
Yeah, that's true. We'll keep battling on. Let's hope 2011's a big year, a better year than 2010.
It's got to be, and it's got to be a proactive year, not a reactive year.
So, once again, thanks for being on our first program for the year, Sue, and we'll talk to you, no doubt, throughout the year.
Yep, looking forward to it.
Sue Price from the Men's Rights Agency. Thanks again, Sue.
Bye-bye.
So that's the first program for the year, 25th of January 2011. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can go to our website, www.dadsontheair.net, and you'll be able to hear the show again, as well as get access to archive material over a number of years. So we look forward to seeing you all again next week. Our thanks to our guests this week, Greg Andreessen, Colin Jory, and Sue Price. And also thanks to Tim, who's been great on working the panel for the show today. So we'll look forward to talking to you all next week.
We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.